Warning, Star Trek From the Holodeck contains adult language and discussions. If you're easily offended, do not continue to listen.
Lock it alone!
Fire.
Holodeck 3 program is reinstated.
Open sesame!
Commander Klingon vessel. We are energizing transporter beam. Now.
Hello, welcome everyone to Star Trek From the Holodeck, the Discovery Edition. I am the captain. If you're new to the show, Captain Michael Flores, and I am from the Terran Empire. But don't be alarmed, I've also changed my ways, like Giorgio. I'm only evil sometimes. I only throw my co-host, David, in the agony booth once in a while.
The agonizer?
Yeah, Dave. Hello, how are you?
Can I serve under Captain Killy? Please.
I would love to serve under Captain Killy, if you know what I mean.
wink.
All right, let's be serious, Dave. There's a lot of great things to talk about in this episode. We're going to be discussing and breaking down Season 3, Episode 10, titled Terra Firma Part 2. Yeah, this episode did some interesting things in the way of canon, clarified a few things that needed to be clarified. Specifically when it comes to the Mirror Universe, we've said before that when you're dealing with a franchise that's 50 years plus in the making, you're going to have to clean house from time to time. And we will get into the specifics in a moment. We also did, in fact, say goodbye to Giorgio. To be perfectly honest, I was not expecting them to actually remove Giorgio from the series this season. But it happened.
Yeah, it did.
I'm a bit disappointed, not because it was written poorly, but because she was such a complicated character. The raw ingredients a character like that brings to a series will definitely be missed.
Yeah, and the only solace I take in it is the fact that how it was treated really shows the strength of the writing. The writing team in general, because they were I really honestly think the writing team currently, Michelle Paradise is the showrunner. They basically showed that they can take care of the crew. They could take care of the characters. They know what they're doing.
Yeah. Well, they have a good grasp of what they want to do with the show moving forward. Yeah. As we have said numerous times, the first two seasons, there was a lot of hiccups, and I don't necessarily think it amounted to bad seasons, but there were definitely some issues. I mean, they moved through five different showrunners over the last three seasons.
Yeah, it was a feeling out process, honestly.
Trying to figure out what they want to do with the show.
Exactly.
I mean, they had changed the show from what it was originally conceived to be before they even started shooting. So that right there complicated and confused matters from the very beginning.
Well, I mean, even if you look comparatively, I mean, me and you have discussed about it in a couple of the past episodes. This season of Discovery, season three, is so different than season one and season two. It's different tonally. It's different pacing-wise.
Yeah.
Everything about it is far different than what we've gotten since the first two seasons.
Yeah.
And honestly, this is the truly what that we can actually see Discovery what it is.
Yeah, I agree. Well, this is the season that we're all going to look back. We're all going to look back years down the road. We're going to look back at season three of Discovery, and we're going to point to this season and say this is when the show found itself. I guarantee it. It's going to be no different than TNG season three, Deep Space Nine season three or four, debatably. Depends on your taste. Voyager season four. This is it. This is going to be the season we point to.
Yeah.
And when it comes to Giorgio, we do know we will see her again.
Absolutely. I mean, this still leaves it really open. And if you know like all the news that's surrounding the franchise currently.
What news, David?
You know that she's going to show up in Section 30.
Spoiler, Dave.
Yes. It's a spoiler. But
we all, everyone, even if you didn't know that she's going to be in her own series, you had to have known that we're just not going to end. All right. She walks off at a portal. Toodaloo.
Toodaloo.
See you never.
And so, like, everyone knows that she's going to get her own series. And it's been rumored that it's tied to Section 31, which honestly makes sense.
Not rumored. It's been confirmed. Alex Kurtzman was on the red carpet saying, Section 31, Giorgio. That's all we've gotten.
And that's all we've gotten.
Yeah. All right, Dave. So instead of tiptoeing around all this, let's officially get into this.
Okay.
Because I know you were kind of being careful because you don't want to jump ahead, because this is the type of episode where we have to piecemeal out these these items to discuss. Otherwise, our fanboyness is just going to take over and we're going to be all over the map.
Exactly.
So we got to be very careful today.
That's the thing.
Okay, so a good TV series should typically work toward closing out big story arcs. And this is something you and I both discussed before the show today, Dave. If you're a good showrunner working on a TV series that's going to be remembered for having good writing, you're going to close out big story arcs, whether they be character specific or more emotionally tied to characterization or narrative. After two or three seasons, certain things can start to run stale. We've all seen it in TV shows. Sometimes elements just aren't as interesting or just not as relevant as, say, a season prior. So a good showrunner may want to close out certain things. For example, just this season alone, David, Michelle Paradise has worked towards cleaning away some of the older elements that have been around since season one.
Yes.
Burnham's emotional baggage that was weighing her down for two seasons, that was done away with after episode two. We worked past it, put much of those issues to rest. Saru's confidence and his desire to sit in the captain's chair, we got there, which has been a thing for Saru since the first season. Tilly's goal to be a part of command, she made it. That storyline has come to an end.
Yes.
Giorgio and her growth as a human, separating herself from the Terran ways, realizing her mistakes and wanting to make amends. Done. This season has been about pushing forward the larger story of Trek, but also closing out storylines. Now, just so that we have some clarification, this, when I say the closing out, I speak in the way of individual character arcs, not the myth arc. A myth arc is what keeps a serialized series consistent, cohesive. Usually it lasts for one season. For example, let's take season two. The myth arc was the overarching story pertaining to the Red Sphere and Control. The narrative is how the events of the story are presented, the structure of events, the architecture of the story. And this shouldn't be confused with plot, which is the sum of the events. These are the things that make up a season. But this here, with the ongoing development of characters, is some solid work. It's solid fucking work. This is what keeps a series fresh.
Yes.
This is something so many TV shows do not do. You have your favorite TV show. Let's say TV show A. They've been now going on for 5 years. They're never bothering with actually truly bringing closure to certain aspects of characterization, subtext, or let's say character B's emotional arc. They just leave it hanging. What happens is by the end of your run as a show, you're left with all these open-ended aspects.
Yes.
And most of the time, showrunners forget what they had opened from season one, season two, season three, And what happens is you get a TV show that just feels convoluted emotionally. Sometimes it's disjointed. Sometimes it feels just disconnected in the ways of theme, because you're not really remembering what you do. So in order to make sure your show stays tight, you close things out.
Yes.
That's why I am confident with Michelle Paradise as a showrunner more than I ever have been, because not only is she doing right by Trek, but she's also doing right by, I should say, she's also doing right in the way of writing. Like, she's got it down, dude.
Yeah. And just like the title of the episode, the two-parter, is Terra Firma. There's a lot of substance that makes this story within this two-parter so grounded, and basically, just like we said, there's no holes in it. It's very substantial.
Everything's tight.
Everything's tight.
Yep.
And it lives up to its name.
It's laser focused, man.
It's laser focused.
Yeah.
And if this is, and honestly, this two-parter proved to me that Michelle Paradise as a showrunner and as the lead writer knows what she's doing.
Without a doubt. There's no question any longer.
And we shouldn't be afraid of what she's got planned, because she knows what she's doing.
Do you remember you asked me, I don't know, maybe two or three episodes ago, you had said something about Michelle Paradise and how you're confident. And I said, well, I like what she's doing and I really liked her work during season two, but let's see how this plays out. Let's see how season three plays out now that she's been in the writing room from day one, because she only came on board the second season halfway through.
Yes.
And after this episode, Dave, it was that little light bulb. Bing! I was like, yeah, she's got it. She's got it. Because it's not just about Trek. One thing I always talk about when I review TV shows is I don't care if I'm a fan of something. I'm not going to like it if it's not written well. I just don't care.
Yeah.
I'm all about writing. If you can't write a show, it doesn't matter how bad I love something. I won't watch it, or I'll tell you it's not very great. And Michelle Paradise is churning out some really fantastic writing on this series. And that's why it fucking hurts me when I go to social media and I see these trolls hating on the show and they're still saying things that they said during season one. And I'm like, are you guys even watching currently? Because the things you're saying don't even make sense. Number one.
Yeah.
Number two, can you even understand what good writing is? Some of the things you're saying just aren't, it's not even making sense.
And the thing is, at this point, when I see Star Trek fans, I'll call them Star Trek fans, Star Trek fans out there that still hate on Discovery, majority of them, have not even watched season three. They just want to say Discovery's bad.
And also, when you hate watch, Dave, it's kind of hard. Most people, it kind of goes to that. There was a whole article I read years back about headline readers. And something like 80, 90% of internet users will read a headline and never actually click the article to read what the article says, but they'll believe that headline, even if 6 months later, 2 months later, 3 months later, they are told different information. That's
yes.
Factual. They won't believe it because they read that headline.
And that's why.
And that's how I feel like people are reacting to some of Star Trek Discovery. It feels like they made up their mind with season one. And now it's like, it doesn't matter what you give them. I guarantee you, if we were to make a joke and gave Rick Berman and Michael Piller an episode to write, poor Mike Piller is dead, but let's just say, you know, we brought back some classic TNG era writers and they were to write and direct an episode, you would still have them complain because they're just set in their ways at this point.
They're set in their ways. And honestly, I've always wanted to poke the bear, so to speak. I've always wanted to at least see one article with the headline come out how just randomly just put Discovery is gearing up to be the best Star Trek franchise has ever seen. and just see what the trolls do to that article.
Oh, they would just belittle the fuck out of it, without a doubt. I mean, we've had our fair share of trolls on our comments, or I should say on our shows, on our website and on Twitter and Facebook. And I just kind of laugh and chuckle, because if they're saying it sucks, they're not watching it. Exactly. Or they just want to hate because it doesn't suck. I'm one of the most critical douches out there, Dave. You know this about me. When everyone else is giving something 100%, what am I doing? I'm like, well, that's 63%. I don't know what you guys are seeing. So I'm not saying my opinion is the end all, but I'm saying I'm pretty fucking critical.
Yeah. And honestly, I take solace in the fact when we do get the trolls, it's almost like when we turn it and just ask them, have you watched season 3? Yeah. They stop. It's almost like you show the crucifix to the vampire. They run away.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, obviously you have not watched it.
No, they haven't. All right. So bringing it back to the closing out of characters, we got a little
sidetracked.
Let's bring it back to the closing out of characters and what Michelle Paradise has been doing this season. And let's connect it to Giorgio. This is what they did for Giorgio as well. Closing out her story. Every element that hinged on her character, they closed it out. Sure, there'll be lasting effects. But for the most part, when it comes to character defining moments for Burnham and Saru specifically, this can now be closed out. The elements pertaining to their growth as characters that came from having a character like Giorgio around, it's come to an end.
It's come to an end.
There's now closure. And when TV shows don't do this, it's a death sentence, because by season 4, as I said, you start having those overlapping and contradictory emotions, characterizations, etc. So to see them do this with Star Trek at season 3 makes me feel really comfortable moving forward.
Yeah, because like now we can move forward, just like we said.
Move
forward.
Exactly.
You can now transition into the characters dealing with what's in front of them now, because in a lot of ways, Giorgio was the last remnants of what they had to deal with.
In season 1?
From season 1 and season 2. Mm-hmm. And season 2. You can't remember. Yeah. You can't forget that. Saru's development is very tied and comes to a conclusion in season 3 thanks to Giorgio and the way he interacts with her.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, I didn't realize it till probably the second time I rewatched this episode. Do you realize that Giorgio herself, she's the linchpin to the entire Discovery crew, like down to even Tilly, where Tilly's growth is dependent on how she's learned, how she's reacted and been able to adapt to Giorgio.
Well, that's why they had to give her an exit like this. They had to. She was a vital ingredient, an element to the entire series up to now.
Yeah.
And you're absolutely right, Dave. She is essentially the linchpin for a lot of these characters. Yeah.
I mean, like, even in the eulogy to Burnham, the eulogy that Burnham gives to her, it's kind of cool that Burnham points out that not only did Giorgio, like, affect her, but also she's affected pretty much everybody's growth and their chemistry up to this point, because she's the antagonist.
Yeah.
She's the one that basically says, no, you guys are stupid. you silly humans, and treats them stupid. But in a lot of ways, she does that so that they can stop and actually really think hard. Is their actions really dumb, or can they actually prove her wrong? And at this point in season 3, all of them are now capable characters that can now go forward into more stories, even down to Stamets, which is so weird to me when I came to realize that. Yeah, I mean, like, Stamets finally, you know, stopped whining after Giorgio, that argument that he had with Giorgio. After the argument with Giorgio, suddenly Stamets kind of lightened up.
Yeah. Well, dude, it goes right back to what you said, that she is a vital element to many of our characters since season 1. And that's why they needed to handle this Giorgio's exit very delicately. And I will say that the way they handle it overall, it was pretty stellar how they sent out her character, how they closed her storyline out, at least within Discovery. And we've said since they've announced that Giorgio is going to have a spinoff series that they would have to work diligently to fix her character from a moral, ethical point of view.
Yes.
Otherwise, it just would be a very hard sell to most Trek fans. Hey, guys, here's a series about a woman that eats Kelpians and murders people.
And murders people.
Like, that's not going to be a Star Trek show that's successful with Star Trek fans. It's just not.
Yeah.
And look what they've done. They did exactly what we said they needed to do. It's been a slow burn since last year, but it came to a head this season. And what a perfect way to contrast how much she's changed by throwing her back into the Mirror Universe to see if she's changed. Given the opportunity, will she make better choices? And she did. She desperately wanted to correct her relationship with Burnham. In a lot of ways, killing her Burnham is what broke her in the first place.
Yes.
And when she saw Prime Universe's Burnham, it added to that pain, realizing that there could potentially have been another way, another outcome. I mean, to know that there's another universe where your daughter lives and she's decent and she loves you and cares for you.
Yeah.
I mean, that's enough to make anyone have a bit of remorse and regret for the life they had squandered, the relationship they had squandered.
Yeah, but I really do like the end of that. For me, this is how I saw the end of Giorgio's lesson in that was like, while she felt sorry for that and tried to make amends with it, at the end of the day, she came to realize that kind of her Burnham was already too far gone at that point. The relationship between her and the Mirror Burnham was broken to the point that she had to kill her Burnham in the very end.
Well, it's going to take longer than 3 months. I mean, she was out there for 3 months, and she thinks she's going to change.
And she's going to change an entire lifetime.
And exactly. Yeah, an entire lifetime of ideology and anger and, you know, just a way of doing things. That's why when Giorgio said that she will attempt to reach her through a language she understands, power and pain, she was essentially talking about herself. The only way she learned was by living through the pain of losing her Burnham.
Yes.
And then experiencing the Prime Universe. And Dave, we talk about fate and destiny a lot on this show, mostly because they are two components connected to various areas of philosophy. As we know, philosophy is what governs a lot of Trek. And I'm thinking, with the ideas that were expressed in this episode, I'm going to have to give you credit, Dave, because you had brought up the idea of fate and destiny.
Yes.
I want to say a couple episodes ago, maybe it was even last episode. But the world of Trek operates within a variation of determinism. There's different thoughts on this, but it seems like the world of Trek is held together by a bit of predetermination.
Yes.
No matter how badly Giorgio wanted to change things, she couldn't.
She couldn't.
Ultimately, it ended the exact same way. And comparatively, the Kelvin timeline, no matter how effed up the timeline would get, Kirk and Spock would find each other and become the heroes they were destined to be. Even if due to a split timeline, the road was altered a bit. But ultimately, at the end of the day, things were aligned.
We're aligned.
The course correction was there.
And dude, not to jump ahead, but think about how that overall lesson of Star Trek, and it didn't dawn on me, but of course, everyone now looks at this episode and ties it to City on the Edge of Forever.
Mm-hmm.
The greatest Star Trek episode of all time, voted by fans everywhere. And you look at the story of City on the Edge of Forever, where if you change this one moment in time, it goes bad. So you have to change it back. And then, like, dealing with that, that in order for you to have this utopia, it has to be predetermined that that woman has to die, or that individual has to die.
Yeah.
Same thing here. in order for the prime, in order for everything to go as planned, as in the Terran universe, Michael Burnham has to die.
Right.
So
yeah,
dude, it's so awesome that when Star Trek from the classic time and Star Trek from today can connect like that narratively.
Well, Dave, this is probably the most, correct me if I'm wrong, going right in line with what you're talking about. This might be the most philosophical episode
it is
of Discovery to date.
It is, dude, and I love it.
Yeah. Well, dude, that's our favorite thing in Star Trek. Our favorite episodes in Trek has always been either the moments that were heavily inspired by Shakespearean tragedy.
Yep.
Or philosophy, always. And that's why I feel like at the end of the day, when I look back at these last two episodes, even though these aren't the most Trek of episodes.
Yes, I agree with that.
This is one of the most philosophical episodes,
yes,
of Discovery we have been given.
And think of like the symbolism of that she dies at that moment when Georgiou dies in that time frame, killing Michael. She's being cradled in the arms of Saru, who is kind of like the antithesis of Georgiou.
Mm-hmm.
That is awesome, dude. That image of Saru, man, cradling her was cool.
Yeah, it's good. All right, so a lot of these things, split timelines, destiny, this all leads to our next big topic and some really cool parts of this episode. But first, it's time for a live read, Dave. Help us stay on the air through 2021 and beyond by subscribing to our Patreon tier. We offer a $3 a month tier, which gives you tons of bonus content and access to our pre-shows, where we discuss a lot of Star Trek news. Sometimes we get a little snarky, a little lippy. We also have a $5 tier that grants you access to thousands of hours of additional From the Holotech podcast episodes, ranging in a wide variety of topics, all for just $5 a month, or you can choose to pay annually on both those tiers and just be done with it. So head over to patreon.com/RainManDigital and pledge. All right, Dave, so we now move over to our next big thing. We now know what this team of writers can do under the leadership of Michelle Paradise, right?
Yes.
In terms of writing, obviously. But now let's turn our attention. Let's look at what they are doing from the Trek angle. All right. So number one, we were right about Carl being a guardian of forever. And my God, Dave, when he said what he was, I got nerd chills.
Oh, dude, even rewatching it, I feel so validated.
Yeah.
It's so cool feeling, so validated.
I have not gotten excited, like really like clap. Like I'm a nerd and I clap,
yeah,
while I'm watching. I haven't done that with Discovery yet. Obviously, I love the show, but it just nothing quite has gotten me to do a little clap all by myself. And when he said, "I am a guardian of forever," with the exact same voice from the original series, dude, it just was so perfect. And it was so, yes, it was validating a bit that we follow shows and we can read the clues, deductive reasoning, right? That's what we have, yes, watching these shows. And yes, it does validate our thoughts, and I do like that. But on top of that, it just was delivered and executed so well. And we also got some clarification on exactly what this is. It's not just a time portal, it's a space-time portal.
Yes.
And using this benevolent entity as a way to test Georgiou and see if she's worthy of a second chance. But also it was very fitting from a philosophical standpoint, as we said, remembering what the original episode, the TOS episode, the City on the Edge of Forever, was about. but also it worked to clarify a few things in the world of Trek. As I said at the beginning of today's discussion, after 50 years plus, a franchise is going to get weighed down a bit, and you will need to clean house from time to time. And I'm talking about in the way of canon. There's things that just get really bogged down when you take into account, the three, four seasons of, of the original series, the seven seasons of TNG, seven seasons of Deep Space Nine, seven seasons of Voyager. There's just a lot. There's a lot there, and it's over through the, it's in the spans of decades. And you will need a clean house. Time travel, timelines, universes, alternate realities, it's become a bit convoluted.
Yes.
And this episode took some strides to cleaning up a few things. Number one, they cleared up the differences between mirror universe and split timeline.
Yes.
By basically alluding to the fact that at some point, the mirror universe was aligned to the prime universe.
To the prime universe, yes.
So now it's canon that the mirror universe is just essentially a split timeline. And I'm okay with this. The idea fits better with the modern direction Trek has taken, specifically in the way of newer theories on time travel.
Yeah.
This answers so many questions we've had for years and even gets into some things that we were talking about last episode. We had gotten to the nitty-gritty of you got to be careful. You can really break a show if you decide to do certain things. And I believe we specifically said they really should start explaining the differences between timelines and alt realities. And sure enough, they did it.
And dude, I'm so happy that just with the few scenes we got when he reveals himself as a Guardian Forever, they talk about the temporal war, how
it's temporal. It's temporal. Isn't that like
temporal?
Isn't that like sushi or
tempura? Yeah. Tempura. I've been saying that. Oh my God. But yes, temporal.
Okay.
Temporal. But the temporal war and actually alluding to that, just like you said, it makes it all fit nicely into a nice puzzle now to the point that now we're more comfortable going into that area.
Yeah.
You know,
because we always are nervous. Like we're hesitant Star Trek fans because we'll be like, "Ooh, this is cool, but got to be careful."
Well, not even just as Star Trek fans, as television fans.
Yeah,
everyone knows time travel is like the jump the shark moment. This easily could have been a jump the shark moment, but instead we get some of the best universe defining Star Trek moments in the entire season.
Yeah.
Because I'm sorry, now that you've actually addressed the whole time travel or temporal aspect of Discovery, now you can actually go into there without me thinking, oh God, you're going to go around the sun again?
Yeah. you are right. A few moments ago, you had said, you know, you brought up the temporal war aspect.
Yeah.
And that was actually number two on what Michelle Paradise did right with this whole Guardian of Forever thing, because using the Guardian of Forever aspect, it explained away some of the issues of the temporal abuse because of the temporal wars and the blatant disregard for timelines. It smoothed out some potential questions pertaining to the part that might have played out and all of that, you know, the part that the Guardian of Forever might have or could have played in all of that.
Yeah.
You know, so I really like that they brought that element as well. I mean, saying that he's been hiding essentially because of the temporal wars and how people were looking to abuse and take advantage.
And it makes sense too, man. I mean, like if you actually think about the Guardians of Forever can easily be used as a weapon.
Yeah.
And I didn't realize it even not until this episode that the Guardians of the Forever are much more dangerous than even the Q Continuum when you think about it. While the Q Continuum can do absolutely anything, the Guardians of Forever are not bound by time and space. So essentially, they can change whatever.
Yeah, but they
limitlessly.
But you say dangerous. You mean in the way that they could be manipulated, right?
Manipulated.
Yeah, because obviously they have some type of enlightened, ethical way of doing things.
Yes.
Because of reasons. We have not gotten into that, obviously. And honestly, I don't think we need to always explore the reasons behind certain things other than the fact that, hey, there's benevolent forces out there that operate within science, within the universe, and that's just how it is in a cosmic sense, you can say. We don't always need to explain things. I feel like the Guardian of Forever, essentially being the Guardian of Forever. Listen, the name explains it.
He is the Guardian of Forever.
Not forever, he's a Guardian. The Guardian
of
Forever, of time. So I don't really think we need those explanations, but we do need to know how certain aspects play in, how they factor in. It shows you, David, how if you just want to, as a writer, if you try just a little bit, I mean, how hard was it to come up with literally two or three lines that makes us happy?
Yes, exactly.
It took two or three. It took two or three words.
Two or three words, maybe.
That's it.
Maybe.
And you're like, one scene. God, thank you. That makes so much fucking sense. And now I can go to sleep at night, you know, feeling fine.
Feeling fine. I know. And it's so, that's what I mean. This is the most validating moment for me as a Star Trek fan in throughout all the season. And that says a lot, that basically not just, now that I think about it, not just this season, but I mean, like even down to the beginnings of Discovery, I have not felt this validated as a fan than right now.
Yeah.
And it's because
it just feels good, Dave. I feel like we're in such a really good place.
And it really validates also the idea that Michelle Paradise is a fan just like us. She knows what she's doing. She understands the history.
She's a Guardian of Forever.
She's a Guardian of our forever.
I love you. So stupid. All right. So moving on, this takes us to the next big question. And we will backtrack a bit to tackle this one. Where the hell did Giorgio get sent to? The Guardian of Forever said Giorgio cannot be healed and that she has to go back to her universe. But yeah, he said he could send her to a time before the mirror universe was created, before the split occurred.
Before the split occurred, yes.
Now, David, what the fuck could this be? We know based on the Enterprise episode in A Mirror Darkly that the Terran Empire dominated much of known history.
Yes.
It is not clear when the Empire began, but Captain Archer once stated that the Empire had existed for centuries as of 2155. Archer did not mention how many centuries, but by this statement, the Empire can be traced back to at least 1955, suggesting that it was a Terran political unit before it became an interstellar empire. Emperor Philippa Giorgio also claimed that Terrans had abolished compassionate ideologies a millennia ago as of the 2250s. Now, Dave, so the Empire can be traced back to at least 1955, right?
Yes.
So does that mean we're getting a series that takes place in the 50s? That doesn't sound like it would work. They could easily turn the series into an alt reality type series, as we had theorized last episode.
Yes.
But honestly, I feel like they're going to be exploring the incursion. It would be interesting to see what time the incursion actually started.
Yeah.
The actual incursion that started the Terran Empire. And just maybe, Dave, here's another theory for you. We already saw those events. And Team Enterprise might have actually been involved. If you remember the season premiere of season 4.
Yes.
Stormfront, part 1 and part 2. The Enterprise had been sent back in time because of the temporal war.
Yes.
1944, I believe. There were the temporal soldiers, I believe. Hold on. I want to make sure I get my facts right. A newsreel segment from 1944 shows Adolf Hitler as he visits a conquered New York City, getting a hero's parade through Times Square. Right there is a time incursion.
Yes.
That never happened. And this was made possible because of the temporal wars and because of why, or I should say the involvement of the Enterprise crew and them being thrown back in time.
Yeah, because this takes place right after Archer destroys the Zindi super weapon.
Correct. Right.
And basically he wakes up in this alternate, in an alternate Earth.
Yes.
And I think that you're onto something. I think this is plausible. Now
it would actually make sense. And it, why introduce new elements when you already have the ingredients here? You have the Na'kul. I believe Vosk was the leader of the Na'kul, which were a species that were involved in the temporal Cold War.
Yes.
They were actually the ones wearing Nazi uniforms, and they were responsible for the alternate timeline that was created. Dave, right here could very well be the time incursion that creates the mirror universe.
The mirror universe. Yes.
So that's one theory. Where else would they go, though, Dave? If it's already been stated in canon that the mirror universe has been around since 1955.
Yes.
And the Guardian of Forever had sent her to a time before the split occurred from prime to mirror. There really isn't a lot of other options here.
This is the only option. Yeah.
Where she went, right?
It has to be. I mean, if they're going to actually tie all of Star Trek's history all together.
Dave, if they were to do that in the Section 31 series, it would completely just smooth out even more kinks if they do it the right way.
Exactly. And talk about,
Dave, bringing relevance to Enterprise.
Exactly. No, normally, I'd be like my old self saying, oh, we got to be careful. We got to be careful. But instead, I'm going, yes, let's do it. After this episode, let's do it. I mean,
I'm open for it, man. I have faith in this team, especially the writers of this episode, Erica Leopold and Bo Yun Kim. They're the writers in that writing room that wrote the story. They didn't do the scripting, but this is their story, which, listen, they should have ownership over Georgiou. They are.
Yeah.
They're the ones that are going to be the showrunners of Section 31. So.
But think about think about the one thing that also has me really excited about that idea, right? Is also we've been told that Georgiou's story is going to be tied to Section 31.
Yeah.
So what if this also ties into the origin of Section 31 as well?
Like this timelines version of Section 31?
Exactly.
It could work. I mean, we already know that Section 31 had originally secretly been started with the very first charter of the Federation.
Of the first, at its beginnings.
Yes, at its beginnings. I mean, we're in a whole new timeline, Dave. So you can pretty much do anything.
Anything.
But I would like to see them tie in Enterprise. It would make perfect sense. You know, yes, they fixed their timeline, but based on time travel and what they're doing now, going with this line of thinking, obviously we know there's tons of different theories out there for time travel, and I'm not going to pretend to be some fucking, you know, scientist geek when it comes to time travel, but the more I have read in the way of time travel and its connection to Star Trek, this idea, this theory of time travel and how you can't really change the past, all you do is create a split. More and more scientists are gathering around that idea, saying that's the more likely conceivable way time travel would work, that you can't change the past, that you would actually create a split. So if that's the direction they're going, then this would actually make sense if they were to connect it to the events of Star Trek Enterprise. Honestly, it's the only thing that would make sense if you're going that far back.
It's the only thing if you're going that far back.
Yes. It would be a missed opportunity, Dave, if they didn't tie it in. It just makes too much sense.
It does. And that's why I'm like instead of saying, oh, we got to be careful. No, I'm fully on board.
I'm on board too.
I'm like, Greg, let's do it. Listen, all right.
If Michelle Paradise were to direct a Picard Golem series at this point, I'd be like, all right, Picard, the Golem years.
Oh, and if she were to fix Picard, could you imagine if she fixes Picard, she essentially would become a saint.
Yeah.
She would become like deified.
They should just cancel Picard season two. And continue Picard's story as a golem in the Discovery time period. And just be like, all right, we'll fire Shaban and Michelle Paradise. Just run two shows. Side by side in the same time period. We'll make it easy.
Please fix this.
Golem Picard. All right, Dave. In the way of cinematography, this show, Dave, the cinematography has always been great. But if you remember, during that first season is when we really got into the intricacies of the cinematography, because the story in itself just lended itself to thought-provoking cinematography. I've always said that visuals is another part of the narrative told side by side the actual narrative. It's a visual story. That's what movies and TV are. And whenever Discovery took us to the Mirror Universe, the cinematography would ratchet up.
Yeah.
And they would do so many amazing things in the way of visual metaphors. And they did the exact same thing here. Playing with mirrors, the metaphor of the ship and the Mirror Universe, the reflections as they're walking down the halls of Discovery and you see the dingy reflection of every member walking, and then as the ship turns, we start from the bottom, and the ship turns, and we come up from, and the camera rises from the bottom to the top as if it's crossing over from a mirror. Dude, it is top-notch work.
It's top-notch, and it's one of those things that I am so glad about Discovery. When it comes to the Mirror Universe, they really play to that visual.
Oh yeah.
But they don't, it doesn't feel overplayed.
No, you know not what I mean? At all. It works.
It works.
It helps create the vibe and the tone.
Yes. It's almost like at this point, it's a standard. It should be a standard. If you're going to tell Mirror Universe,
that's what you got to do.
This is what you have to do for visual storytelling.
Play with those reflections.
Play with the reflections, play with the parallel lines, play with your framing.
Yeah.
Down to the framing, dude. The framing and some of the shots in when they're in the Mirror Universe, chef's kiss. That was beautiful.
Yeah.
So the stuff was, I mean, I just talked, one of the scenes that I thought was really awesome was the final scene of Georgiou and Burnham. Mm-hmm. With her dying in Saru's arms.
Yeah.
Just visually, that was pretty.
There's a lot of intimate shots in this episode, a lot of close-ups, a lot of lingering shots as well, which, you know, you're told even in editing class, David, film school, you remember this,
don't linger.
I'm like, but what if you want to really sell the emotion? Don't linger, Michael. I'm like, what the fuck do you know? And sure enough, when it really matters, that's what these writers, or I should say the editors, chose to do. And of course, this is all done under the leadership of Kurtzman and Michelle Paradise. They have say in that editing room. And I feel like it's a great call, you know, working with those editors and letting them linger a bit on those close-ups, letting us get that full performance from those actors. It was very important. The performances were very, very important this episode, especially between Georgiou, Saru, and Burnham.
And
we needed to see him.
I don't know if you noticed this, the way that they also, there was a couple shots I noticed, which I absolutely loved after the third time I saw it. When Georgiou is facing a certain way and she's facing Burnham and talking to Burnham, there's some times when her reflection is what she's actually talking to. I mean, you look at it.
Yeah.
And it's almost like a hint that she's not really trying to talk to Burnham. She's trying to talk to herself.
Yeah, there's a lot of that for sure.
It's so awesome, dude, that
it's well thought out.
It's well thought out.
And that a lot of that could go to the director as well. I don't want to exclude him out of the mix. Who is the director of this episode, by the way? I did not put that in my notes.
I got to look that one up.
It's actually not listed here on IMDb, surprisingly. How do you not list the director? Yeah, fuck them. They're like, who's the director? Who gives a fuck?
Who cares?
Yeah.
You know what? I'm even looking it up on the...
It's not listed, Dave.
It's not listed.
Yeah. Well, I guess we should pay attention next time when we watch the episode. I'm sure it's listed there.
To the credits,
yeah. Otherwise, there's going to be a big old DGA boycott here if you're not listing your directors.
Who did... Yeah, I can't find it.
And we'll give him credit later. But, Dave, this does take us to the end of our show. I'm going to give this episode a 96%. I would even say retrospectively, episode 9 now boosts a bit as well. Yes. But just focusing on this episode alone, 96%. I thought it was a beautiful story. I mean, what a wonderful portrait between mother and daughter. The chosen dialogue and how it was written. One of the moments that really just hit me in the feels was when Burnham expressed her love for Giorgio, but not because she reminded her of her Giorgio, but because she was this Giorgio, that she did specify, I love you for you, for what you are, not because you represent or remind me of someone else.
Yeah.
I love that moment. It was very powerful. So not only did we get just great closure on many elements, closing things out so that the story can move forward, but also just emotionally speaking, it was very powerful. The cinematography was amazing. I can't fathom people hating this episode. I give it a 96%, Dave. What about you?
I am actually up there with you too. I have to give this one, I gave this one a 98.
Damn, 98%. Look at you, David.
And then in retrospective, in combination with part one.
Yeah.
This is 100. It's 100 for me. The two-parter story they told here was 100. They gave us everything that every Star Trek fan has always wanted. Nostalgic feelings with connections to the old canon, taking that old canon, bringing it forward, bringing the story of Discovery forward, connecting these characters. And I have to agree with you. I mean, I thought the monologue of Burnham in the very beginning was very, very cool. It gave me the vibes of, you know, Wrath of Khan in the end. What is when Kirk is talking about the death of Spock? I kind of got the same vibes of Michael Burnham talking about Giorgio.
Yeah.
And I liked her one line that she said in her monologue where she says she was the most unexpected of gifts and I will miss the hell out of her. The fact that she's the unexpected of gifts ties it not to just Burnham, but to the entire crew. Giorgio, while she's been hard on the crew in a lot of ways, as me and you have discussed in this episode, she's been the linchpin of the crew to kind of like bring them forward, make Saru more a capable captain, and make Tilia a capable first officer. The fire that basically she put them through is what made them stronger as a unit. And I like the fact that basically in a lot of ways, Burnham was not just speaking for herself, but she was speaking for the crew. So it's a great send off to a character. Makes me more excited about what they're going to do with Giorgio now. Because that's something that me and you have not discussed in a while is like the Section 31 series that was supposed to be coming out. Wasn't it like, I think it was supposed to come out this coming year, but with corona, with the pandemic and everything, it probably got pushed back a bit more, but now this gets me more hype for that series. So overall, I think Terra Firma was a really great Discovery episode in total, in story-wise.
Is this going to be... Do you think later in history, as the years go by, do you think this is going to be that two-parter that Trek fans gravitate to? You know how every series has that two-parter... TNG,
oh, yeah.
Best of Both Worlds.
Best of Both Worlds.
Voyager has the, what is it, the Year of Hell.
Yeah.
Deep Space Nine has multiple two-parters that are just fantastic.
Let's not go there. Enterprise, the one that you just mentioned about Enterprise Stormfront, that was actually, and that was the beginning
Mirror of Darkly, too.
In Mirror Darkly.
Yeah.
That was the beginning of Enterprise's pickup, because that was the beginning of season
I know.
Three.
And just for those people out there listening who may not have given Enterprise a chance, if you can get through the first two seasons, which also weren't terrible, season three and season four really get good.
Yeah. Well, it's been a long time, Mike.
Oh, please. Don't you dare sing that song. I will murder you live on the air.
Agonizer booth immediately.
I will throw you into that agonizer booth. Yeah, I just can't really, I don't want to end the show, Dave, because I want to celebrate more. Like this.
This feels really good.
It
feels really good.
We had an epic two-parter, Dave. In a series that's already epic. I think the only way we can celebrate, Dave, honestly, is only one way we can truly celebrate.
Yes, yes, yes.
Getting from there to here. It's been
I think this is how we should go out.
We got to make those pizzas, Mike.
My time is
all right. I want to thank everyone for listening. Thank you, David.
Thank you. Live long and prosper.
I will touch the sky. And they're not going to hold me down no more. No, they're not going to change my mind. Because I've got faith of the heart. Going with my...
I couldn't help but notice your pain.
My pain?
It runs deep. Share it with me.
End simulation.